Penguin Random House Audio presents Frankenstein in Baghdad by Ahmed Sadawi. Read for you by Eduardo Ballerini and Kaleo Griffith.
Top Secret. Final Report. 1. With regard to the activities of the Tracking and Pursuit Department, which is partially affiliated with the civil administration of the International Coalition Forces in Iraq, a special committee of inquiry set up under my chairmanship, with representatives of the Iraqi security and intelligence agencies and observers from U.S. military intelligence, has come to the following conclusions. A. On September 25, 2005, under direct political pressure from the Iraqi side, the activities of the Tracking and Pursuit Department were partially suspended for the purposes of the inquiry, and the committee summoned the department director, Brigadier Sarur Mohammed Majid, and his assistants to testify. They briefed the committee on the nature of the work they had been engaged in since the formation of the Coalition Provisional Authority in April 2003, and up to the time of the inquiry. It is clear that the department had been operating outside its area of expertise, which should have been limited to such bureaucratic matters as archiving information and preserving files and documents. Under the direct management of Brigadier Majid, it had employed several astrologers and fortune tellers on high salaries financed by the Iraqi treasury, not by the U.S. authorities. According to Brigadier Majid's testimony, their only purpose was to make predictions about serious security incidents that might take place in Baghdad and surrounding areas. It is not clear to the committee to what extent these predictions helped avert security incidents or whether they had any practical benefits. B. The committee established that a number of files preserved in the department had been leaked from inside. All those working in the department were subsequently detained for questioning. C. Through an examination of the computers used in the department, it was discovered that documents had been sent by email to someone referred to as the author. Upon further investigation, this person was identified and arrested at his place of residence in the Fanar Hotel on Abu Nawas Street. No documents related to the Tracking and Pursuit Department were found in his possession. The author was found to be in possession of the text of a story he had written, drawing on material contained in documents belonging to the Tracking and Pursuit Department. D. The story is about 250 pages long, divided into 17 chapters. Experts from the committee examined the text and concluded that it does not violate any provisions of the law, but for precautionary reasons they recommended that the information in it should not be published under any circumstances, and that the story should not be rewritten. 2. Recommendations. A. The committee recommends that Brigadier Sarur Mohammed Majid and his assistants be transferred from the Tracking and Pursuit Department, and that the department revert to its original work of archiving and documentation. Those employed as astrologers and fortune tellers should be laid off. The question of the mistakes the department has made over the past few years must remain under review, and the documents relevant to the department's activities must be preserved. B. The committee discovered that the personal information in the identity papers of the author is incorrect. It therefore recommends that the author be rearrested and questioned in order to learn his real identity and any other information relevant to the work of the Tracking and Pursuit Department, and also to identify the people in the department who cooperated with him and to assess the extent to which this matter poses a threat to national security. Signed, Committee Chairman.
Chapter 1. The Madwoman. 1. The explosion took place 2 minutes after Elishva, the old woman known as Daniel, or Daniel's mother, boarded the bus. Everyone on the bus turned around to see what had happened. They watched in shock as a ball of smoke rose, dark and black, beyond the crowds, from the car park near Tehran Square in the center of Baghdad. Young people raced to the scene of the explosion, and cars collided into each other or into the median. The drivers were frightened and confused. They were assaulted by the sound of car horns and of people screaming and shouting. Elishva's neighbors in Lane 7 said later that she had left the Batawin district to pray in the Church of St. Odisho, near the University of Technology, as she did every Sunday, and that's why the explosion happened. Many of the locals believed that with her spiritual powers, Elishva prevented bad things from happening when she was among them. Sitting on the bus, minding her own business, as if she were deaf and not even there, Elishva didn't hear the massive explosion about 200 yards behind her. Her frail body was curled up by the window, and she looked out without seeing anything, thinking about the bitter taste in her mouth and the sense of gloom that she had been unable to shake off for the past few days. The bitter taste might disappear after she took Holy Communion. Hearing the voices of her daughters and their children on the phone, she would have a little respite from her melancholy, and the light would shine again in her cloudy eyes. Father Josiah would usually wait for his cell phone to ring, and then tell Elishva that Matilda was on the line, where if Matilda didn't call on time, Elishva might wait another hour and then ask the priest to call Matilda. This had been repeated every Sunday for at least 2 years. Before that, Elishva's daughters had called irregularly on the landline at church. But then when the Americans invaded Baghdad, their missiles destroyed the telephone exchange, and the phones were cut off for many months. Death stalked the city like the plague, and Elishva's daughters felt the need to check every week that the old woman was okay. At first, after a few difficult months, they spoke on the Turaya satellite phone that a Japanese charity had given to the young Assyrian priest at the church. When the wireless networks were introduced, Father Josiah bought a cell phone, and Elishva spoke to her daughters on that. Members of the congregation would stand in line after Mass to hear the voices of their sons and daughters dispersed around the world, often people from the surrounding Karaj Alamana neighborhood. Christians of other denominations, and Muslims too, would come to the church to make free calls to their relatives abroad. As cell phones spread, the demand for Father Josiah's phone declined, but Elishva was content to maintain the ritual of her Sunday phone call from church. With her veined and wrinkled hand, Elishva would put the Nokia phone to her ear. Upon hearing her daughter's voices, the darkness would lift, and she would feel at peace. If she had gone straight back to Tehran Square, she would have found that everything was calm, just as she had left it in the morning. The sidewalks would be clean, and the cars that had caught fire would have been towed away. The dead would have been taken to the forensics department, and the injured to the Kindy Hospital. There would be some shattered glass here and there, a pole blackened with smoke, and a hole in the asphalt, though she wouldn't have been able to make out how big it was because of her blurred vision. When the Mass was over, she lingered for an extra hour. She sat down in the hall adjacent to the church, and after the women had set out on tables the food they brought with them, she went ahead and ate with everyone, just to have something to do. Father Josiah made a desperate last attempt to call Matilda, but her phone was out of service. Matilda had probably lost her phone, or it had been stolen from her on the street or at some market in Melbourne where she lived. Maybe she'd forgotten to write down Father Josiah's number, or had some other excuse. The priest couldn't make sense of it, but kept trying to console Elishva. And when everyone started leaving, the deacon, Nader Shamuni, offered Elishva a ride home in his old Volga. This was the second week without a phone call. Elishva didn't actually need to hear her daughter's voices. Maybe it was just habit or something more important, that with her daughters she could talk about Daniel. Nobody really listened to her when she spoke about the son she had lost 20 years ago, except for her daughters and St. George the Martyr, whose soul she often prayed for and whom she saw as her patron saint. You might add her old cat, Nabu, whose hair was falling out and who slept most of the time. Even the women at church grew distant when she began to talk about her son, because she just said the same things over and over. It was the same with the old women who were her neighbors. Some of them couldn't remember what Daniel looked like. Besides, he was just one of many who'd died over the years. Elishva was gradually losing people who had once supported her strange conviction that her son was still alive, even though he had a grave with an empty coffin in the cemetery of the Assyrian Church of the East. Elishva no longer shared with anyone her belief.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?